if we understand that those two realms really do exist, then we have to take everything that comes with that. And I think with the realm of God or a spiritual realm, then there has to be beings in that realm. And we do believe in, like, and you know, messengers. God's used different messengers throughout the Bible, and we call them angels or whatever. That's fine. But then there's also this idea then there's an opposite of that.
Welcome back to the Rheology Podcast. Rheology is a nonprofit ministry that is centered around rethinking, researching, and rediscovery, a process that dives deep into the depths of an intimate partnership with God through a concept Jesus initiated called ecclesia. We strive to cultivate an environment that is not only safe to question and seek, but also one that is founded on the truths of partnership, words of hope that were uttered from the lips of Jesus himself. So in this podcast, we'll question Christian tradition, we'll investigate God myths, and we'll listen to those who are stirring, questioning, and desperately seeking more of what God is doing in and around us each day.
Hey everybody, Scott here with Rheology, and of course the Rheology Podcast, and that's Brandon over there.
Hey everyone.
And we're here going through another episode of questions, and we do that while we drink coffee. So Brandon, what coffee you got going on today?
Got straight up again.
Black straight
coffee.
Up. Yeah. You don't have any sugar in that coffee at all? Nothing? Straight up black?
Not today.
Ouch. Okay.
It's one of those days.
It's one of those. Wow, no doubt. Yeah. it's a bad day when you're drinking liquid tar. Or
true,
as other people call it, liquid ashtray. So I'm doing this is the 8 o'clock coffee, decaf. People talk really highly about it. I thought I'd give it a whirl. It's not bad.
Nice.
And I'm drinking it once again out of my Magic Morning cup from the Magic Morning Bakery in illustrious Bedford, Indiana. Yeah.
There you.
Anyway, so there we go. All right, what we got? What's next on the docket here? What question are we discussing today?
Working our way down the list here. Today I wanted to ask you whether it's funny just coming out of the gate with such a deep question here, but maybe it's not so deep. I don't know. Because we already talked, the first one of these we did, we talked about how we should view heaven and hell as it's understood in the biblical corpus. My question today is about Satan and whether we are to understand Satan as a real spiritual being or whether it's to be viewed more appropriately as just a manifestation of sin itself or some kind of...
Yeah.
I guess I would say a manifestation of sin. I guess growing up, I was always in a tradition where we viewed Satan as a real spiritual being. But more recently, sure. I've started to read some stuff, and I don't know what to make of it, that maybe Satan is more just sin itself rather than an actual spiritual being. But I don't know the answer. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. Well, disclaimer, I don't know the answer either. But we're really going to try to limp through this thing. And another disclaimer, I am not an expert by any stretch of the imagination when it comes to these types of things. Honestly, I think I've kind of like gotten into the point of my life where these areas, if you say you're an expert, I'm really going to raise an eyebrow because I'm not sure anybody really has an absolute, you know, amazing grasp on this stuff, especially this. But I guess what we can do is talk about the stuff we do know, and then that might help shed light on the stuff that's a little more in the gray area, and we might be able to reveal more of the gray stuff, but probably not all of it, obviously. So I think, you know, last week we were talking about, like, you know, two worlds or realms, you know, two realms that God had created in Genesis 1:1, the very beginning of the whole story that we kind of live, is, you know, declaring that God created both of these realms. And we know these realms as heaven and earth. And as we said last time, heaven is really kind of a generic word for realm, but we associate it with God's realm, or we might even say the spiritual realm, or, you know, whatever. And there are, you know, God does live in this realm. God isn't exclusive to this realm, obviously, but this is primarily God's realm. And there are other creatures that live in this realm as well. And if we believe that there is God and good, and there are creatures that God has created for good, we have to also kind of take in that there's an opposite of that, even though in the beginning that probably wasn't really part of the blueprint. And we talked about the blueprint too, like the idea that when God created things, he had a kind of a way in mind of that things should go. And I really don't think evil or bad was a part of that, but it did become a part of that. And it's like a process we have to go through in order to, like, be refined almost. So maybe we could kind of think of it that way. So we do know heaven and earth are two different realms. Heaven is the realm of God, or a spiritual realm. And then earth is the realm of humanity, of us. And so, so I think about those two things, and I kind of look at it like that. If we understand that those two realms really do exist, then we have to take everything that comes with that. And I think with the realm of God, or a spiritual realm, then there has to be beings in that realm. And we do believe in, like, and, you know, messengers. God's used different messengers throughout the Bible, and we call them angels or whatever. That's fine. But then there's also this idea then there's an opposite of that. And I believe that's true. I believe that is absolutely true. Now, whether there is an actual, you know, personified, like, leader of all of that, that's where that one's really dark in the corner of the recesses of the grayscale here. So, but I thought we would just kind of go through some of the names that we use, and a lot of times we'll use these names as, like, a defense for, like, yeah, it exists, because look, see right there, Satan, right? It's in the Bible. Boom. I thought we'd go through those and kind of help, like, really kind of, you know, clear through some of the cobwebs, maybe, and really get down to it. So obviously, I mean, we definitely do, you know, Satan or the devil or whatever, it definitely has become a character in you know, human culture, not just American culture, but, you know, European culture as well, before America's. And, you know, he's this dude in a red suit, and he's got, you know, horns and a pointy little tail and pitchfork, and he's going, yeah, sneaking around, and he's on my shoulder, yeah, right?
He's the mega boss.
He's the mega boss to beat at the end. So there's one name that we have for him, and the name is Satan, and we do see Satan in both the Old Testament and the New Testament. And the Hebrew word for Satan is Satan. And Satan is really, more than anything, it's just a very generic term for adversary. And there are plenty of places in the Old Testament where the word Satan is being used for adversary, and, you know, like an enemy. And there are several different situations where, you know, it's referring to any kind of adversary, another kingdom, another king, you know, whatever. And so we do see this quite a bit, especially like in Numbers 22. Do you have Numbers 22? Can you get that? And can you, like, read it? Because this is one that would be like we have translated Satan into Satan. Once again, we talk about how we translate things, right? And the unfortunate part is between, let's say, Jesus's time and our time, you know, and probably after like the fourth century on up to like our century now, you know, we're talking like 15, 16 different centuries. Folklore has played a big part in how we translate. And so we translate the Hebrew word Satan as, because it sounds like Satan, but that's not really what it means. It means adversary. So what's Numbers 22:22 say?
But God was very angry when he went, and the angel of the Lord stood in the road to oppose him. Balaam was riding on his donkey, and his two servants were with him.
Okay. So this is the story of Balaam or Balaam and his donkey. And so God here is angry at him. And so he sends a messenger, whoever that might be, and he stands in the road as an opposition, right? An adversary. So really at this point, God has become the Satan in a weird way, right? So when we hear that, like, obviously when we hear the word Satan, we immediately go, oh, it's the devil. You know, it's him. It's him. It's the character, the personification of all that. But the reality is like, we can't just look at every time we see the word Satan in the Bible, we can't just immediately go, ah, they're talking about, you know, the dude in the red suit. Because here God is not happy with Balaam, and he says, hey, I'm gonna get your attention here. So he stands in the road as an adversary in opposition. And so there are lots of scriptures that are just like that talk about that. We want to look at Satan as like typically as the Job, you know, Job chapter one, Satan, right? Which is where God is kind of having this conversation, and he's having a conversation with, you know, with Satan, and he's asking him like, you know, where have you been? Where have you come from? And he says, I've been on the earth, roaming the earth. And then God says, oh yeah, would you check out my servant Job? He's pretty cool dude. So here you've got a situation that's a little bit of a conundrum, because you do have what was looking like an actual conversation between two people, you know, two characters, right? You have God actually conversing with another character.
Yeah, it looks and like so Satan is a proper noun in this context versus
proper noun
adversary.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but then again, this, you know, this Job, the story of Job is one that would have been taught, you know, told verbally from generation to generation to generation. And again, we have to question whether it really was an actual conversation happening. And we actually have to kind of question whether, you know, this is a real personification of an actual character, or is it just the idea, right? Just the idea, the principle that this is good and evil kind of coming together, and Job is going to be, is caught in the middle of this. So, you know, is this something that we should be taking literally, right? Or is this something that we should just be saying, hey, here's the idea of this story. The idea of this story is that Job is about to be tested big time, because everything is going to fall apart in his life. Is he going to trust God? Is he going to curse God? Is he going to jump to conclusions? Is he just going to, you know, what his character is at risk here? What's going to happen? You know, do the elements of it really matter that much? So we have that. So then there's Satan. So we hear the word Satan, and now we understand that in general, Satan is just adversary, Satan. And not every verse in the Bible is pointing to an actual character or to even actual like evil. The Job one here we know kind of is, but other references are not. So then we have the next one, which is the devil, the word devil. And primarily the word devil is only in the New Testament. And a lot of it is all in the Gospels. You don't really see it like too much any other references of the New Testament. You see it in the Gospels a lot. And the Greek word for devil here is diabolos, and which is kind of like where we get the idea of El Diablo in Spanish or whatever. And then we're really
from
Taco Bell. Hot sauce. Yeah, a really good hot sauce.
Just had
the devil hot sauce. Did you?
Not this morning.
No, okay. Well, that's great. Maybe you should add that to your coffee. It might help the ashes. But so the devil, that word just really means accuser. And it kind of is like a the concept of, you know, the courtroom setting, right? Paul does this a lot, right? The courtroom setting, and helps people understand a little bit better that, you know, you've got one guy who's a defender on one end. He's defending you. And then you've got the prosecutor on the other end, right? And the prosecutor is really trying to find the cracks in your story. And he's trying to, like, you know, throw all kinds of accusations and slander and stuff that, you know, at you to accuse you. But we have this, like, specifically, okay, that's cool, accuser. And that could be, you know, used in the general form as well. But then we've got, like, in Matthew 4, when Jesus actually goes and spends time in the wilderness, we have this story of the devil, the accuser, is literally having conversations with Jesus. So, you know, tempting Jesus, and we know it as, like, the three main or major temptations that Jesus kind of experiences while he is actually in the wilderness, you know, mentality, and also technically in the wilderness. So he's not just in, you know, a desolate place. He's also, you know, in this, like, theoretical wilderness as well, and in conflict of making sure he can, he's really got the right motives in mind and stuff like that. So it looks like here that he's talking with some dude. You know, right? He's having a conversation. The debate could be, again, is Jesus literally having a conversation with an actual, like, character, right? A personification. Or is it the human part of him conflicting with the heavenly part, right? Those two worlds colliding in a body. Could it be that those things are just, you know, the desires of the sinful nature, right? We don't know. So then we'll go on down to the next one. Then we got this weird thing that happens in Genesis. And Nahash is the Hebrew word for snake. And now we got this crazy story in Genesis of this snake slithering around. And not only is it even some people kind of question whether it was slithering or not. Anyway, we got this talking snake in Genesis, and this is, you know, where things get a little weird, and it's like, what the heck is this? And we've got this snake trying to do a job of a deception job on primarily Eve at this point. And so we have linked Satan, the devil, back to the snake in the garden, the serpent, right?
And that's not something Genesis does itself, right? It's something that comes later. Because
Genesis nowhere does it really spell that out. It does come later. Again, it's kind of one of those things of, is it a personification, or is it this the presence of evil or sin, right? I think this is interesting because the word here, Nahash, for serpent, its root word literally means to hiss. So it's like the snake got its name because of the sound it makes. But they also use this word to the root word. And the funny thing is Nahash is the root word of Nahash. I don't ask me why or how to explain that, but it is. But the so this root word, it also literally means to whisper or to enchant. So it is, you do kind of think of that like devil on your shoulder whispering into your ear, right? Or a snake hissing into your ear. I won't go into like, can't go into how the crazy symbolic nature of a snake is throughout the Old Testament. Of the presence of evil, but it is tied, the symbol of a snake, it is absolutely tied to the presence of evil. So again,
it's interesting you mentioned it kind of is similar to whispering, because it kind of sounds like the Hebrew word nephesh, which I think is soul, which I think also is related to breath. So it seems like those two are probably related. Yeah, absolutely.
So I mean, there's a lot of symbolism in that as well, right? If you think about it, like the breath of God was breathed onto us or into us and brings life, and the idea of you know, Nahash is almost like sucking life out of it, right? It's like, instead of, you know, it's like an inhale, exhale, right? The exhale is the breathing of the spirit, and the inhale is like sucking out a part of your morality or whatever through hissing or through, you know, whispering or whatever. So interesting thing there. Whether this is an actual snake or not, I don't know. We do know definitely that this is a story that was passed down for generations. It was actually probably a story that was written more along the lines of a gospel. Like the Genesis is really probably more of a gospel to people from the East, and to show them of a different God, a holy God, right? A unique God, and the story of how he's actually the creator and not some other gods. And so, you know, some still gray area there. But so when we think about the snake, we kind of think about that. It's also, Nahash is also linked to like divination, like soothsaying, you know, fortune telling kind of stuff as well. So all of it's kind of like sneaky, you know, kind of like a mentality. And so that's kind of where, and even like in Genesis, you know, it does say that, like, you know, that the snake was like one of the, you know, God's like the most clever of all the creatures of the field kind of a mentality. Yeah. So again, you get this kind of idea of something definitely, you know, trying to see around things or trying to find a way around things, kind of sneaking around, being clever. Mm-hmm. Then we have Revelation 20, verse 2. And this is where
before you get to that real quick, because the other thing I noticed in Genesis, sticking with Genesis, is if you just turn, so we have just come off of the story of the fall with the serpent, and then you go into the story of Cain and Abel in Genesis 4, and that's when God is speaking to Cain, and he says right here, Genesis 4:6, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it. I think that's really what got me thinking. You know, it's talking about sin there, but it could have just as easily been talking about the serpent from the previous chapter as the thing that's crouching at your door. And you kind of link those two together, and it's like, okay, are we really just talking about sin here rather than actual some creature?
Right, right. Yeah, you get the ideas of like a predator, right? I mean, the devil, or, you know, is also linked to being like a wolf in sheep's clothing kind of mentality, a lion, you know, on the prowl, seeking to devour.
It's this anthropomorphism, like assigning, you know, human or animal characteristics to an idea. Because we see that elsewhere in the Bible. I think Proverbs talks about wisdom as if it's like a person. So it doesn't seem like that far of a stretch to have that type of mindset.
Yeah. I mean, totally. Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's kind of the storytelling mentality, right? Is we do that with lots of stuff. I mean, I remember having a conversation with someone a couple of years ago who literally, you know, was like, no, the earth is flat because there are four corners. See, because, you know, like in the Bible talks about stretching through the four corners of the earth. And you're like, okay, it's also poetry, you know, to get a point across. It's not necessarily meant to be taken as absolute literal corners or pillars or whatever. Just it's the idea that, you know, it is, you know, it is a reference to the whole earth. There isn't a place that does this. Concept doesn't apply to or whatever.
See, this feeds right into my ultimate thing I'm struggling with now. Mm-hmm. And we definitely don't have time to get into this, but it's like, it seems obvious in many places in the Bible that things are not supposed to be meant to take literal, like that example you just gave. It's some kind of a storytelling device to help communicate a truth. We do this all the time as humans, so it's not that surprising. But the problem I have is, how do I know where to draw the line at things that are supposed to be taken literal versus those that aren't? And does it matter whether I know to take something literal or not? Seems like it should matter, but it's just hard to know when to, you know, understand what you're reading is, you know, is a metaphor or some kind of storytelling device versus reality.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and it doesn't help either when Jesus teaches in parables, right? So, but I think the reality is like, you know, he teaches in parables primarily because there is a concept to understand, and it's not really, it's like a way to be instead of steps to do, you know. And since we've talked about, this is a relationship and it's not a religion, and it isn't, you know, we are talking about holy God, unique God, that the way to connect with this God isn't like all the other gods where you just do this, you know, you do these five things and we're good. I've just appeased him and I made him happy. Right. So, that's how I can stay in the good graces of God. This God is unique. And so therefore those things don't really do much for him, if anything. And he's looking for the gray area of life, you know, to be able to say the way that you live with me is way more important than the things that you do for me. Yeah. And I think that's why Jesus teaches in parables. And I think that's why, a lot of the Old Testament, you know, is written, you know, in that similar style, because, it's something that carries along, right? It's the details get lost in time, you know? And we can sit here and say, like, do you know, we can ask people on the street right now, what month was President Kennedy assassinated?
Right.
And I guarantee you, most people are like, I don't know. You know, I don't know. Yeah. But the idea is that everybody knows that he was assassinated.
Yeah. I think that's everybody a comfort knows. I've taken in it. Living in the uncertainty, the comfort is that the truth of what's being communicated is the same, whether it's to be taken as a story or as literal. It doesn't change the fundamental thing that it's trying to teach you. Right. And so I'm starting to kind of sit with that and feel some comfort from that.
Well, I really honestly, you know, I think this is the same thing. I mean, cause like, you know, we can sit here and go through all these things of like, you know, the snake and Satan and devil, they're all rooted together. Cool. People think about this word Beelzebub, that's the devil too. And it's not, it's actually a God that was worshiped in a certain city, a Philistine God mentioned in 2 Kings. Yeah. We have Lucifer. People talk about Lucifer. It's really, there's only one point, and Isaiah talks about Lucifer, and it's, you know, a shining star, light bearer, which he's probably pretty much just talking about the king of Babylon really more than anything, but somehow that gets put into there. I think discernment is one of those things that you have to really kind of use, because I mean, going through some of these words and terms is helpful because it does at least go, I can't sit here and just assume that what I've been told you know, is true. So there we've also, we go back to storytelling, right? We've got this 21st century American culture of storytelling that, you know, we've been told that, you know, there is a devil and he's out prowling all over everywhere and he's going to get you and that stuff and be on the alert. And we got to pray against him and he's trying to lure us to hell. And those, again, that's not helpful. You know, if the story is told perfectly, I mean, you're in youth group days with me, you know, and the youth groups did this little game where it was, you know, the telephone game, not just youth groups, but in schools and stuff, right? Where you started with one person down on the one end and someone told them, you know, whispered something into the ear and they had to pass it down through 10 people. And by the time it got down to the 10th person, it was like incoherent. You know, like, I don't know, it was something about a shelf made of concrete. And I was like, you know, it's completely opposite. So there is a happy medium, in my opinion, of like being able to like use your brain, but not use it too much. And because we are talking about a pretty ancient culture, I really think that, like, for me to think of, and I would also refer to like N.T. Wright. N.T. Wright taught about this on Unbelievable podcast. They have a series called Ask N.T. Wright Anything. And this is obviously one of the things people are very inquisitive about. And he has a really good, N.T. Wright has a really good way of like answering a question without it sounding, you know, incredibly definitive, right? Where it's like, oh, I know, and this is it.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, well, let's kind of think about it and let's talk. You know, I think one thing that he talks about is like, we can't get to the point where we are, where we're at the extremes, right? Where there's like, where we give the devil, right, or Satan, or that personification, we give it way too much credit. Mm-hmm. like he's a god, like he is like God. He's all knowing, he's all powerful, he's everywhere. He's not, so we can't really do that. You know, is the devil tempting me and you at the same time? How is that possible? How can he be over there with you and here with me? That's not biblical, you know. So I think, you know, there's one extreme of like giving the devil like so much credit, and Christianity has done that, right? Where it's like, you know, he is going to come through your walls and get you at night, and you know, all that kind of stuff that just is not theologically correct. But then again, on the other hand of that, of like, you know, not, you know, taking evil for granted is another thing.
Yeah.
Of like, we can't take it completely for granted. And I think that's why I opened with the idea of those two worlds, those two realms coming together, because I have to believe that there is evil, you know, is evil. There is a principality of evil, right? Do I believe that it's one guy that's, you know, he's the general of all the other evil armies? Probably not.
Yeah, I think that's what's been unhelpful to me growing up in faith as a kid, kind of viewing the devil as the final boss, somebody that almost like we have a responsibility to beat on our own throughout living our daily lives, when in reality, regardless of whether he's to be viewed as a spiritual being or not, the truth is that Jesus has already defeated him or evil through what he did. And it's not something that we have to beat on our own, I think is the point that was lost in the storytelling that made it seem like Satan is the final boss that we have a responsibility to take on ourselves.
Right. Yeah. We have to cast him out. We have to pray against him. All those kinds of little one-liners that seem like they're fun, right, to think about. They're fantasy oriented, right? Yeah. But are they true? Are they really real? And not to negate like the power of persuasion, right? Or the idea that, you know, we do have an adversary, and an accusing adversary. I wholeheartedly believe, I love those meanings, because that to me, that makes way more sense to me than a guy walking around in a red suit kind of mentality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that my own sinful nature is strong enough. Now, is that backed up by a bunch of evil demons and a prince of those demons, you know,
maybe not.
But so I think there's a healthy medium to find, you know, that, you know, the Satan is not a god, but he's also, you know, but evil is also like not, not present kind of thing.
Yeah,
I mean, right. it definitely is there, and definitely is something that we definitely fight against, but
yeah,
you know,
and it's, I think what has also been helpful is reading through like Paul's letters and stuff where he talks about these types of things as being like powers and principalities that we encounter and that we have to, you know, have to deal with. So to your point, there is still something we have to deal with, but it may be not just this one sinister being that we encounter directly and have to take on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Peter, and we talked about this, I think last week, maybe, you know, Peter, when we talked about the new heaven and new earth, Peter's letters are really just encouraging people. Why? Is because they are involved and engaged in a season of persecution. And so, and N.T. Wright talks about this as well, which is really good. It's like, well, I thought Jesus defeated evil. Why are we still battling evil? But the reality is like we share in partnership with Jesus' suffering, right? And so we also have to, you know, follow his example in every way possible. And so, you know, is it Satan controlling every little thing behind the scenes? Probably not. But does evil exist in this world? And is it something that we should definitely be aware of and be cautious of? Absolutely. So I think it's just using some discernment, not getting all caught up in, you know, fantasy, being able to like, you know, search the scriptures and understand, you know, why things were written when they were written and what they mean, and give us a better foundation for when, you know, 21st century American fantasy religion comes and starts trying to get us to believe in stuff that may not be completely true.
From the whole Rheology team, we hope these podcasts are encouraging and educational. Rheology exists for three main reasons: to reach, train, and equip those who want to go deeper with God in this partnership called Ecclesia. If God has been stirring in your heart, where you are wondering if there's more than what you've been experiencing in today's 21st century Christianity, we'd love to connect with you, to hear your story and help you know that you are not alone. You can simply contact us via the website, rheologylife.com, or reach out via Instagram at rheology_life. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.